It's Saturday, January 29th, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Geek News, in the second half, your questions and comments about technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. In the second half, I'll invite you to join the conversation via phone. The questions and comments about technology are welcome. The phone number is 800-655-5877. Geek Speak is a Creative Commons endeavor. Share and share alike. If you'd like to participate by creating music or images for our website, please do so. Go to geekspeak.org. Send us an email. I'm Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, we have Mr. Al Luckow. He's a new media architect. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
And also Lindsay Lonnie. And Lindsay Lonnie is a systems analyst. Good morning.
Good morning.
We're going to start out with geek news as we do every week. I think we'll start with Lindsay. What's up in the sky or in the crazy world of... Lunacy.
Yes. So Dr. Brad Carter, who's a senior lecturer of physics at the University of Southern Queensland, says that Betelgeuse, which is one of the night sky's brightest stars, is losing mass. And, you know, a lot of people know that already, but...
Stars in general lose mass.
Lose mass, right. So it means that it's collapsing slowly but surely.
Betelgeuse?
Oh!
Exactly.
Three times.
He says that it could run out of fuel and go supernova at any time. You know, this is his thing. And when that happens for at least a few weeks, we'd see a second sun in the sky, and there might be no night during that time for Earth.
Wow, so it'd be really bright.
So in astronomical terms, what does at any time mean?
That means any time between now and, you know, hundreds or thousands of years from now.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So he says a neutron star would result and maybe a black hole 1,300 light years from Earth. And, you know, we'd be showered with harmless particles. It wouldn't hurt anybody. It actually might be beneficial because they create heavy elements, you know, gold and stuff like that. And so it could actually be beneficial. Yeah. But, you know, he's saying it could happen by 2012. And, you know, that's causing
So what he's saying is it's already happened 12 years ago.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's right, because it's pretty far away.
13 light years away? Or is it longer further than that?
It says 1,300 light years.
So this could be old news.
Very old news. Yeah. Right. It always is. Astronomy is like that. So his claim that it's happening soon is based on conjecture.
I don't know. I think
desire.
Exactly. You know, the 2012 thing.
Yeah,
you know,
news headline grabbing is what.
Right, exactly.
So I don't hold my breath. Is what you're saying.
Don't hold your breath.
It'd be kind of cool to have a bright enough star where there's not nighttime.
Yeah, they have the picture of Star Wars, you know, the beginning with the desert and the two suns.
You know, just our luck, if it does happen, it's going to be like right in the time period when we're on the other side of the sun from it. And so it won't affect us at all, really.
Yeah.
It's like, remember Hale Bopp?
Yeah.
The comet?
Right.
I remember seeing that in the daylight.
Yeah, it was bright.
It was like a fuzzy ball in the sky.
Yeah.
Which was cool.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much for that. Al, let's talk about iPhone stuff. Maybe anything new this week on translation software?
Me gustaría contarles acerca de este nuevo dispositivo de traducción.
What?
Al, your voice has changed.
Well, it gets a little robotic, and I speak Spanish sometimes.
So you only speak Spanish in a robotic accent?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Which is cool.
So what is that?
Well, the thing is, there's a lot of applications out now for phones that do translation on the fly. And
what did that just say? I don't speak
It just
Spanish.
Said, I would like to tell you about this new translation device.
Very cool. Well, so, but here, you had to type this into the phone?
Here, I'll try another one. This is what you do. You hold the little record thing down, and you say what you want to say. So here's something. I think this is pretty cool.
Okay.
Oops, I didn't hold it down.
Oh, let's try it again.
I think this is pretty cool.
How long does it take?
Creo Esto es bastante fresco.
Okay, that was really fast.
Yeah, I mean, it's about three seconds. Two and a half, 3 seconds. And you just speak into your, you hold the little record button, you say what you want to say, and then it's got two readouts, and it translates it to text, and then speaks it for you, and then also writes it.
Can you have it speak the English that it heard you say?
Oh, yeah.
I think this is pretty cool.
Nice.
And so, it's pretty, it's neat, and, it seems like, wow, I mean, this is...
That's really fast is the thing that gets me, is that just in your handheld, which everybody carries around anyway, you can translate... Almost in real time. I mean, that's enough to order, enough to get directions.
This is in 3 seconds.
The whole deal.
3 seconds. Yeah, it is a little awkward, but this is my phone. This is on my phone,
and it's always one of those things we're talking about. Like when you talked about the visual translation one about
right.
a month ago,
that WordLens. Yeah,
to remind everybody, WordLens. It takes an image of text and real time video of text. It looks at it and analyzes it and replaces the text it's seeing with a translation of whatever language you want.
Right.
And so it's one of those things where when you see this happen, it's kind of creepy. It matches the font, it matches the coloring, and you can barely tell, if you're holding still, you can barely tell it's even doing anything,
right.
except that it's now a different language.
Yeah.
That real-time kind of modifying the world to understand it differently, this one as well, know that another 2-3 years, that'll be real-time.
I mean, this is amazing. The name of this particular app is called Jibigo.
It's not Babelfish, huh?
No, it's not Babelfish. It can be a neat name. Actually, it's Babelfish.
Babelfish.
Your girlfriend and my wife corrected me on that. It's supposed to be Babelfish. And
okay.
Maggie said she heard it directly from Douglas Adams at something she saw. Matt.
Okay.
So it's Babelfish. Just so everybody wants to know, this app is an iPhone app. It's called Jibigo, and they have a number of applications, and these applications exist on Android and on iPhones as well. There's another one called Speech Trans, which also does this exact same thing. Speech Trans is one that requires internet connectivity.
Okay. The one you're using doesn't require
an internet. So that's why I bought it. It's a little bit more expensive. I mean,
and
we're talking
a large database.
We're talking under $20 on everything here. But Jibigo, it's all contained within the phone or whatever you're using. Mm-hmm. So then you don't need to have internet to, if you're in Zimbabwe and or Egypt and there's no internet,
you get the language
pack. You can still translate to Spanish.
Does this go back to, if you're speaking with somebody, can you then record their Spanish response and then have it translated?
Yeah, these both go back and forth, and there's a number of languages. And
so
then,
why would anybody learn a language anymore? I mean, that's a sad thing.
Well, here's the one that's kind of really amazing. It's called the Skype Translator.
Okay.
And this one is by a company called Family Bruners, which is a little bit of an odd name. But this application, you open it up in Skype, and when you talk, and then they, it's the same kind of delay, but it translates for you. So you're talking to somebody who's French, and you say, "Hey, I need to change the time of this meeting."
You're doing a Skype video conference.
Mm-hmm. Skype video conference.
Okay.
Or a Skype conference.
I, as the French hearer, French.
Right. Yep. And there's demos of this on this site, and that's Family Bruners. Is the name of this
company. Do they
company.
Modify the lips so it looks like you're speaking French?
Actually, they don't, but...
It's just a matter of time.
It could just change like anime and just move your mouth.
Yeah.
But they show examples of it, and they have videos of it being used, and I think some of their examples are audio only, because a lot of people use Skype for just audio because it's a cheaper thing.
Seriously, like 20 years from now, no problem. You'll be doing video conferencing, your mouth will be modified, your language will be modified, and the person thinks you'll speak a different language.
You say, press 1 for Spanish, and you press 1, and it doesn't give you Spanish, it just translates you to Spanish,
right?
So it's, and it does it, I mean, it seems to me like there's always going to be some delay, but it's amazing to see these videos of it working on Skype. And then I can tell you from firsthand experience, I had to buy this thing to try it out to see, well, I'm not talking about this on GeekSpeak, if it's one of those
dorky
things,
it just doesn't really work.
And this actually worked, and even I did it to Maggie, and I said, see you later, or something, and it figured out what time of day it was based on the clock and said the appropriate response in Spanish, because I guess you say something different in the morning that you say.
Okay, that's creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's interesting in the sense that I was just thinking you could do a translation of slang, like internet slang, LOL, kind of things like that, and then translate it into proper English, right? Or in the feeling of an author, right? So if you want to speak in Shakespearean way, you speak normally, and it would translate for you using the library of a certain author.
I'm sure
there's an unbelievable amount of creativity generated from this thing.
Actually, it's just around the corner.
Yeah, but then again, of course, all of that social interaction starts happening through the computer. You start becoming a multilingual person, but not really.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Imagine that you run into somebody. You don't know what language they speak, but because your phones have talked to each other, the phones know what languages you both speak.
There you go.
And so you just have this headset, and you start talking, and the other, it auto-detects. That would be really
cool. We're like inventing apps on the radio.
On the fly.
What makes me really happy about this is that I don't have to get an implant like all the sci-fi shows told me.
Or have some kind of worm go
in
your ear.
Carry it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so this sounds all peaches and roses, but the world's not all non-conflictable. So tell us something about the high seas, would you, Lindsay?
Sure.
Non-conflictable, do you like that?
Non-conflictable.
let me see if that...
translate?
I'll try that right now. Non-conflictable.
Does it say error?
It's not
going
to work.
Let me see what it says.
Does not compute.
Nine comfortable.
Nueve comodo. Oh, okay. I like that.
So nine comfortable, please.
Yes, nine comfortable.
Sure. Some people think that pirates are fantasy, right, except in the olden days. But there are still a lot of high seas bandits out there, and they're a big problem for ships, including big ships like oil tankers, container ships, etc. Actually, last year there were 430 reported attacks, according to the ICC's database. So BAE Systems, which a lot of us are familiar with the name, they came up with a prototype device that shoots a non-lethal laser beam that can be seen over 1.2 miles away. The laser provides a visual warning to not come any closer, for one, and then anyone who ignores that warning and comes closer will get subjected to the disorienting light. And it doesn't damage your eyes or anything like that, regardless of proximity. Mm-hmm. So you can be far away or close up, and it's not going to damage the eyes.
What is the disorienting light? What does it look like?
So
you tell me, but then I get nauseous.
Well, she can't remember.
It's a little flash. The theory is kind of, jet fighters that attack with the sun behind them. Mm-hmm. You can't fire at them because you can't see them precisely. Right. And that's the idea behind this. It's just so bright that your eyes can't process and you can't focus. So the pirates could not fire on the ships accurately and things like that. Couldn't aim weapons.
They wouldn't even necessarily know what the ship was.
Right, exactly.
But a lot of times, don't they just sort of open those little doors and get the cannonballs to just shoot in that direction?
Yeah, they don't need to look at it.
They can take down the sails
the right way, and then they shoot a lot.
It's so bright it works in daylight, even.
Wow.
So,
and if they're swinging across on ropes, it just disorients them.
Exactly.
It's interesting that there's also the high tech or the high powered audio spotlights, which are ultrasonic speaker systems that then translate into sonic at the location, and they're extremely aimable, and you can overpower with volume. So if you get two of these things, you can take out, two levels of senses with these. And they're not dangerous in the sense that they don't blind you necessarily. But I'm assuming there would just be a switch on it to say blind all the people on the ship, right? I mean, wouldn't it just...
Well, it's a laser, so it's focused.
You don't want to hurt all these people that are trying to kill you.
Right.
I know. It's one of those things that's non-lethal, but you're on that ship and you're about to be boarded. I don't know how much you'd care.
Yeah.
So what about if these things start being used by pirates?
Well, they say that they're only, it's defense, so they're only going to sell it to certain people, and it has a mechanism.
Only the good guys get
right,
one.
Only like,
nothing could go wrong.
Yeah. It has a lock so that if the ship gets boarded, it locks up and you can't use it anymore, supposedly. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how that works. But
all right. Well, thank you. Let's talk about some piracy fighting stuff as well. Recently, Google got kind of pressured into offering some restrictions on their quick search. So you know when you're typing into Google, a drop-down comes with suggestions for you?
Mm-hmm.
So you type in something like Inception DVD, and it will then start finding all the most recent searches and kind of give you this feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Well, recently, Google was pressured into censoring its results based off of a certain, kind of arbitrary piracy-type terms. So BitTorrent, for example, doesn't work anymore. If you go to Google, let's see if it's working today. Go to Google and you type in BitTorrent. Yeah, it doesn't come up with BITT, doesn't actually come up with some suggestions. But if you type best, you get Best Buy and Best Buy Santa Cruz because it kind of knows where I am and things of that nature. So in any case, Google is now kind of restricting it. But it's ridiculous because, of course, no one's searching for BitTorrent. When you want to do piracy type things, you search for the movie you want to get,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So you find the most recent release of some film and you type that and DVD rip. And all of a sudden, those work no problem. So it's a completely ridiculous way of trying to fight the problem of too much information in the world.
That stuff changes. I mean, people find ways around it. And, really spelling quick. Things different. You know, you go from pirated, you call them wares, and then they change the spelling of wares. I mean,
that's right.
There's no way to stop this kind of thing.
And whose quote is it that information wants to be free? Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it is now.
It's a good quote.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Facebook, Al, shall we?
Oh, sure. People use Facebook, and I use it. And you have all this content going in there, and you know, there's all this talk about, well, what's Facebook doing with all my pictures and all this stuff I'm saying, and you hear all these stories. Well, there's a company that's trying to create a printed version of Facebook, so you're able to go in and say, well, here, from this date to this date, I want a book of everything that's been said, you know, all of the stuff I've posted, and these 10 friends' comments.
As well.
Yeah. So
and they print you a book out of that?
And then you get back a book. So it's basically your Facebook life rendered in book form.
Interesting.
Which is really neat. I mean, I love that idea.
I wouldn't be convinced that would work very well, except for that app that you suggest on the iPad called Flipbook? Flipbook?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which does this amazing job of taking Flickr or Facebook or Twitter and rearranging it into kind of a book form with multiple pages. Mm-hmm. And it's really quite beautiful. One person's comment that's just kind of a quick comment shows up, but it's not the big deal. It's in kind of a list. Mm-hmm. Somebody else's comment that actually gets a lot of responses, the system goes and finds the image that they're talking about on some website, grabs that as a thumbnail, takes the comments and puts them in there. And it's all stylized in such a way that you're like, it's very compelling.
Oh, nice typography.
It's really beautiful. Yeah.
And
I'm assuming these books are like that. They're going to be attractive.
They are going to be as good as they can be. Yeah. I don't know if they'll be as good as Flipbook, but I can tell you another example that does this, blurb.com. And by the way, all these things we're mentioning, all these translation things, they're all going to be on geekspeak.org after the show. So if you're thinking, oh, what was that translation thing or what was that face? You know, you can find all these stories, you know, after the show in our show notes at geekspeak.org. So there's another company called blurb.com, and I've used them to make books, you know, different kinds of picture books, you know, Mother's Day, and you put all your photos in there and stuff. And Blurb has a feature where you can enter in your blog, like say you use like live, you know, one of the blogs, you know, one of the famous blogs. My mind's kind of going blank right now, but
it's okay.
You know, LiveJournal.
Okay,
your LiveJournal. You type that in, your name and password, and it's called a blog sucker, and it sucks your whole blog in and then allows you to have a printed book of your blog for between a particular number of dates. So this is not earth-shattering.
But the idea of saying it's mine and also all these friends is very interesting.
And Facebook essentially is a blog. I mean, basically, it's a blog for everybody. I mean, really, it's a blog. You know, if you're on Facebook, you've got a blog, basically.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, having this book, I think it's kind of cool because it makes something tangible and seems real. And it is a life. It's almost like a journal, you know, where you have comments of friends. And I think it would be neat to look back. These people, the name of it is Your Social Book. And I think they're at the point where they're at the VC stage where they're trying to get in. You can pre-order, but they still don't have enough, capital to kind of push it over the edge. But it's an interesting thing coming out. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that stuff.
Cool. Thank you very much. And speaking of Facebook, I think, Lindsay, you've got a Facebook story?
Yes, indeed. So, excuse me, a former a PhD student at Stanford in the psych department started to notice that after his friends were done looking at Facebook, they seemed depressed. So he did a study on this, mostly just involving his friends. Mm-hmm. So it was a small study, I think scientifically somewhat unofficial, and found that they perceived other people's lives as better and more interesting than their own, and it caused them to be depressed. But everybody is posting the best of their life up on Facebook, so everybody's depressed, thinking that everyone else's lives are better than their own.
You know, so what you're saying is if you're reading Facebook a lot, you're seeing all of your friends' most interesting things, and then comparatively, your life seems dull and boring.
Right.
Al, do you have this problem?
You know what? She's right.
Aww.
I've been looking at Facebook too much, and
I
feel...
it was just me.
it was me, because I always do amazing mushroom
pictures.
I thought it was only me, and I was looking at Leslie's Facebook, and I felt really bad. I know.
All right, moving on. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. We have Lindsay Lonnie and Al Luck out in the house with me today. We're chatting about news and such like that. you're welcome to call us and ask us questions about technology. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. You can also join us via chat if you'd like. We are in a IRC channel right now. We have three or four people in there. Hello, everybody. And if you'd like to join us, go to the GeekSpeak website, click on the shows. Over on the left, it says instructions to chat, and we'll talk you, walk you through installing an IRC app and all that. I wrote up a little article for that. We are taking calls now. The phone number again is 800-655-5877. I want to know, let you know that KOSP co-sponsors the Santa Cruz County Symphony performance, Strictly Classical, featuring Symphony No. 5 by William Boyce, Beethoven's Concert for Violin, Cello, and Piano with the Pacific Trio, and Symphony No. 39 by Mozart, performances at the Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium Saturday, January 29th, hey, that's today, at 8 p.m., and Sunday, January 30th at 2 p.m. at the Mellow Center in Watsonville. Tickets and information are available 420-5260 or online at santacruzsymphony.org. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. My name is Lyle Troxell. We have Al Luckow and Lindsay Lonnie in the house today. You are welcome to call us at any point with questions and comments about technology. The phone number again, 1-800-655-5877. Al, do you have a what happened with you interesting this week? What interesting thing happened to you this week?
Oh, I was just sitting there, and one day it was Thursday. I was getting all these calls. Too many calls. One comes in Las Vegas. I just have everything go to voicemail. And
Al, your life is so much more interesting than mine.
You should read his Facebook. It's really
well,
sad.
It's actually kind of whatever you do, don't read my Facebook thing.
Wait, so who calls you from Las Vegas?
So I don't know if this will work, but this is
are you gonna play the message?
Yeah, what the heck.
It's too weak, man.
Is it?
It's too weak.
Okay.
Well, who was it?
It was Kevin Mitnick.
Kevin Mitnick, the famous hacker extraordinaire.
Yes. Yeah.
The world's famous hacker.
The guy that
wait, he just calls
took
you
down
the
FBI and all that stuff. I get a message.
You play that message in my car when I ride in here, and it's just like, hey, Al, this is Kevin Mitnick. Can you give me a call? Here's my phone number. Like, what?
No. And that's what I said. First, Kevin Mitnick has my phone number.
You have voicemail from President Obama. Would you like to take it?
So that was funny. It turns out that
What does he want to talk to you about?
I had drawn a picture of him when he got out of jail, because Kevin Mitnick was a well-known hacker, young
he
guy.
He actually took over the whole phone system in Las Vegas. He's in control over it by hacking. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that he's calling from Vegas. And it's that famous story. If you've seen like a hacker movie, mm-hmm. And there's a young kid that does amazing things, and then they're searched by the FBI. You know, there's tons of them. War Games, an example.
Like hackers?
It's hackers. It's based around Kevin Mitnick.
Yeah.
That's
and
the kid.
You might have seen bumper stickers about 10 years ago that said, Free Kevin, because there was a lot of controversy as why should he be put in jail for... I mean, they really made an example of him, and he was in jail for, I don't know, a couple years or 22 months or something. Well, when he got out of jail, I drew a little cartoon of him in the jail cell reaching out with a pole to touch a computer, because he was supposedly restricted from touching a computer.
It's one of the restrictions of his release is he wasn't able to touch a computer for years.
And then I drew that, and this is when I was working with Waz at Wheels of Zeus, and then we sent it to him, and he got the cartoon. He's writing a book now, and he wants to use that cartoon in the book, so he tracked me down somehow, and that's what he called me about.
So did you remember drawing the picture?
Totally didn't remember at all.
We should throw the picture up on GeekSpeak. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
If you want to email it to me later today,
sure,
I'll get it up.
Sure.
And, you know, one of the first shows that I finally went, you know, all of our GeekSpeak episodes should be up online, was actually the interview with Kevin Mitnick about one of his books.
When was it?
2002 or something.
So when he got out.
Pretty much when he got out, yeah I think so. If you go to geekspeak.org and you click on shows and you go to 2002, the most recent audio file. That's the first audio file up online. Mm-hmm. Has the interview with him. I have no idea if it's any good. That was, you know,
that's
a
cool,
long
though.
Time
I mean,
ago.
To get him at that point was,
fun.
Amazing.
All right. Well, thanks for the
it's a geek
story.
Bit. Nothing.
Him, yeah, chatting with you. We are taking calls with questions and comments about technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. You got a problem with your hard drive? You got a problem with your computer? You're wondering what kind of new computer to buy? We can cover that. Yeah, we might not know the answer, but we can talk about it. The phone number is 800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. That sounded really slow there, didn't it? I forgot for a second. All right, let's go ahead and go on with geek news as we wait for calls to roll in. Lindsay, I believe let's go with you, Lindsay. Let's talk about computer science for high school, shall we?
Sure, why not? Google, for the fourth year in a row, is funding a program, Computer Science for High School, CS4HS. And that's their website, too.
That's great.
WWCH4HS.
CS, of course, is the short abbreviation for computer science at universities.
Exactly. It's a workshop for high school and middle school computer science teachers. It introduces new and emerging computer science concepts, gives them all the cutting-edge tools, and provides tips and guidance for how to teach these things to kids. So if you're interested in hosting one of these workshops at your university, community college, or technical school, and this is for U.S., Canada, Europe, Middle East, and Africa, you can submit an application for a grant funding at that website, cs4hs.com, but you have to do it before February 18th. And, you know, with the numbers declining and people registering to be computer science students right now in America, I think this is a great time for this program. And they're trying to double their funding right now. So if you want to be competitive in the global market, let's get more people in computer science.
All right. Well, thank you for that. We got a call in from John Santa Cruz asking about the translation software you were talking about, Al, if there's an Android version, because he's going to Spain.
Yes. Jibigo is the one that I did on the air,
right?
And I used my iPhone for that, but they also have an Android version for that.
And it probably works exactly the same.
It's probably exactly the same thing.
So you can learn about that from the links today on Geek Speak Show. And of course, today is January 29th, 2011. And, you know, there's also a couple calls. We've had a couple calls, a couple emails and stuff about what's going on with Egypt, with the internet, and kind of our opinion on that. Now, the reason why we're not really covering the story so much is that it's covered so much right now, and it's such a hot topic. But we can talk about the idea of, is the internet a human right? Is access to information at that level getting to that point where it should be just like access to food and water and medicine? And I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think?
Well, I think when they cut off their internet, they left civilization.
So, it feels that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, they cut themselves. They're no longer part of modern culture to cut the internet out from the people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the internet is something that I think it is a right. I think it is a right. I don't think that I think you need to have something to I don't think you need to be supplied with a computer, but I think that if you are able and you can. Mm-hmm. Spend a dollar or two at an internet cafe, or I think you should always be able to use that just the same way you're always able to use a phone.
Okay, and I mean,
that doesn't work over there either.
We keep on bringing analogies to China restricting what internet traffic looks like and shaping it, and actually forcing large providers there to modify the content. The classic example when we talk about these kind of internet rights issues from a governmental standpoint is Tiananmen Square knowledge in China being restricted, even though there's great Wikipedia pages about it, and you could read quite a bit about it. When you're behind the Great Wall of China, you can't read it as well. And that aspect always feels a little, restrictive and totalitarian.
Well, they're communist.
But it's not nearly like completely dropping it.
Right.
Though I got to say, I don't think that, I grew up in a world, when I was a kid, there wasn't internet, and it wasn't that bad an experience.
Well, if you look at China, they are communist, and that's their government, and for like it or not, they've all agreed to be this government. I don't think everybody in China hates being communist. I think they're like, okay, well, this is okay with me, and so they're doing and the government isn't taking internet away from them. It's restricting it in a way we don't agree with.
Right.
But then again, we
technically have restricted internet as well. I mean, there are restrictions on internet, right? We've agreed as a society not to have child pornography available.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Unfortunately, sometimes it is still, but we fight as much as we can. Mm-hmm. So to some regards, depending on the social norms and what's acceptable, that's what the internet can look like. Mm-hmm. So what about totally removing it? What do you think, Lindsay, a government completely taking themselves offline?
Well, it was selective in Egypt. 88%, the four big ISPs, they left the one ISP that hosts Coke and Exxon and, other large money bringers, international companies. But, I think it's wrong, and that's, I'm living in the United States. I believe in, civil rights and things like that. But, if I was in a communist nation and I prescribed to that kind of government and I trusted the government to make those choices for me, it would be a different thing. But could it be equated to book burning? Information.
I guess for me, I'd rather have people have food and water and housing and medicine before internet. You know, like it's definitely low on the list.
Hospitals don't have internet now. Hospitals, you know, they're probably going to have problems with getting their supplies. I mean, things are grinding to a halt.
That's true.
The internet, shipping, all kinds of
stuff. And the people don't, the key is that the people don't agree with it. You know, I mean, if you're in communist China and you have these restrictions and you agree with it, fine. The thing about Egypt is this isn't what the people want. The people don't want this at all. So,
but is there a government by the people and for the people?
Yeah, I haven't really kept up on my.
Well,
Egyptian
you can see
politics.
Why we're not talking about politics deeply here. But there's our opinions on it. Thanks for the calls and questions from Watsonville. Kevin, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, how you doing?
Quite well. What's your question or comment today?
Well, I'm having trouble using my television as a display for a MacBook Pro.
Are you using HDMI or some other form?
HDMI, and the problem that I'm having is I'm either getting video or audio. I can't get both of them at the same time. What I did is I have an HDMI connected to a mini port to HDMI adapter, and then I guess because the computer's only less than a year old, but I guess I had to use a separate audio cable, and so I bought a 3.5 to RCA plug, and then also I had to buy an adapter, 3.5 to 3.5, to get the 12 feet that I needed to watch it from. And what's happening is I either get audio or I get video, and not both of them at the same time.
Yeah, so what's happening is your TV, okay, first off, let's back up a little bit. HDMI is the newest video format. It actually has a capability to run audio as well, and that's a pretty standard thing on the most recent stuff. So your TV is expecting, when it selects to HDMI, to also get audio from the HDMI port. So what's happening for you, your MacBook does not do HDMI out on audio out on HDMI. So you can get a cable that does HDMI audio injection, which allows you basically to take an audio file a line and plug it from your output of your computer into the HDMI feed, if you will. I'm not sure the model you have, whether it's got HDMI. It's possible that it has audio on the HDMI line. It's possible it does. The newest ones do. But this is still kind of a problem. For the mini HDMI is the issue, actually.
They say the iMac 2009, MacBook Pro 2010, and 13-inch 2010 computers supply an audio signal from the mini display port.
Right.
But not all mini display port to HDMI adapters support audio out.
That's the question. So what cable do you have that switches from your mini display port to HDMI? Is it an Apple product?
No, it's. I'm glad you asked because I kept the box. It's a Cables Unlimited.
It's probably that cable that's the problem.
You could try Griffin. Griffin is a good company that.
What I would do is ask around for somebody else that has a mini display to HDMI Apple one. Or Griffin, and see if you can borrow it real quick. Go over to the house and plug into their system and see if it works.
In addition, that'll
solve the problem. You could also go down to a store that has these things with your MacBook and try it.
I'm going to post a link to an article that explains this.
Yeah, that's probably the best thing to do. We'll have that up on geekspeak.org.
Yeah.
Kevin, thank you so much for the call. Good luck on your home media experience.
Thank you very much for your help.
Keep in mind, you would solve this problem almost completely by getting an Apple TV, the newest one. It's somewhere around $100. You'd plug the port from that to the TV, and then you'd wirelessly actually connect to it and send your content through. I know it's another product, blah, blah. It might not be the most enjoyable experience, but Al's got one, and he likes it or loves it.
I love it.
There you go.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kevin. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and go to Santa Cruz. And David, hi.
Hi.
So you want to talk about WikiLeaks and Facebook and so on?
Oh, you were on topic, and I'm just bringing up the idea, and it's out on the Internet in a couple of locations that as a social networking tool, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, has some countries would like to shut it down just because of the amount of information that's carried about their citizens that they don't have control over.
Right,
okay?
Exactly. Yeah.
So there's all these reasons.
Let me clarify that real quick. The general concern is that you don't normally, with these social services, you don't have an authoritative magazine-style situation where you can say, hey, you're a press, you need to follow these rules in our country. Instead, you have anybody talking and everybody's listening to everybody talking, and it's a very hard system to control. So go on.
It may actually, this is my point, the control of it may actually be, there might be a little trap door in it that you can create flash revolutions, like in Tunisia, the
Jasmine
revolution,
that, sure.
And the implication has been that our intelligence agencies can now blackmail countries with the possibility of having a flash revolution. into doing what they want.
One of the issues with flash, that term of flash mobbing, which basically means a lot of people see an idea, they like it, and they follow the instructions of it. There's examples, the great video examples of this, a flash mob in Union Station in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Go there at 10:03 p.m. and stand there frozen for exactly 1 minute. That's like the idea. And, 500 people do that, and you have an amazingly cool spectacle. And that idea of saying, hey, let's do this cool thing and have a lot of people do it at the same time, that mob idea, the reason that they're called flash mobs is that they happen so quickly and they disappear so quickly. Now, when you use the term for flash revolution, the same concept, but you very quickly induce a revolution in a country, clearly not as fun, but maybe more socially effective. The thing with that is, trying to engineer that is actually very hard. You have to have people think it's a good idea. You have to have enough people think it's a good idea. So to make that as a blackmailing thing, I don't know how valuable that is. You have to have enough public desire to do something.
You're saying the dormant, you have to have dormant capacity?
Yeah.
And of which country in the world that's not been oppressed by our dictators for the last 30 years doesn't have dormant capacity?
Well, I think the trick of it, I think you're definitely hitting the spot that makes governments uncomfortable. When you have a population that's unhappy, if you give them complete ability to communicate very effectively, it makes them much more powerful.
Well, we used to do that by throwing printing presses and lithograph machines behind enemy lines.
Technology seems to do this all the time. You get the easier it is to pass information freely, the less simple it is to control a populace into doing something that they don't want to do. I think that's definitely true, and I think this is another example of that. And
there's
the problem,
out.
Of course, with that is that it's the way to solve that is not to try to destroy all sharing of information. You basically have to appease the people at some level. What Egypt's doing is going to fail.
Well, of course,
this is my own silly opinion.
The appeasement will fail. I mean, Howard Zinn, in his last interview I saw, they asked him how come there was such a loss of political power between the 70s and 2001, the 9/11 period. And he said because in the United States, what we thought was political power was basically personal liberties. Everybody got to come out. But nobody really cared about grabbing the levers of power. So we sacrificed. Liberal society gave up political power. And so you see these other cultures coming up, and really what they want is maybe liberty, but they don't want the power, Maybe.
Right. Interesting. David, thank you very much for the call. Take care. From Salinas, Julie, welcome to Geek Speak. Julie?
Hello.
Hey, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Can you pick up your phone or something? We seem to have a little bit of technical problems. Can barely hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Really, very barely. I'm not sure what's going on, but it's really, really quiet.
I'm driving, so you're through my Bluetooth on the phone.
Okay.
Which is safe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Julie, I actually kind of have a summary from Rick about what your question is, and I think I'm going to go ahead and summarize it because it's so hard to hear you. But please feel free to stay on the phone, and maybe the reception will get better and we can hear from you. But basically, you got four teenagers, two wireless computers, and the question is, how do you restrict when they can be on the computer, when they can be on the internet, basically? Is that kind of the issue?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, great. So what I mean, this is an interesting problem. There's definitely good software solutions for this. You could install install parental guidance software on the computers. Both Windows and Macintosh operating systems allow you to do restricted accounts. And with those accounts, you can time them when they're available and when they're not available. And even some services, like you wouldn't be able to do the internet, but you could do Internet Explorer, right? You could make it not function during a certain time of day. Depending on if you're on Windows and a Mac, this is going to be a very complicated process. But here's a really simple one if you really want to kill your internet at your house, the Egyptian method. All you got to do is get one of those self-timer things that turns on certain times a day and turns off at certain times a day. These are like little clocks you'd plug a light into when you're on vacation. And instead of plugging your light in, plug the router in.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be perfect because every time it turns off and turns back on, it's got to do a hard reboot. But it should function pretty well for that. Yeah. You go on with your question, Julie.
No, I was just saying I have several of those because when we do take vacation, we do time our lights. So.
Yeah. The other way to do that, depending on the kind of router you have, the kind of wireless router you have, is that inside the software to manage that, you might have this ability built in. It's not uncommon for a router to be able to disconnect and reconnect at certain times, and that might be what you want to do. And you might want to do that at the DSL modem level or the router level, depending if they're two different things. And it really comes down to the software. So what I would do is log into your router or your DSL modem.
and look around at advanced features and see if you have any kind of scheduling features built into the router.
Okay.
If that fails, then do the brute force method of having it turn off and on.
That sounds good. I just need my guys to stay on task for homework.
Right.
And now, you know, having 4 against 2 in the household is a little bit hard.
Yeah, sure.
That we cannot help you with.
And if
anybody does think of a way to help kids do their homework, let me know.
The other thing you can do is you can monitor their time. You can actually look on the router. Sometimes it tells you how much connection time is happening. And you can actually detect whether someone's gone online or not. Good luck.
Okay.
And I mean the big parenting good luck. Not, you know. Thanks, Julie.
Yeah, but, you know, they're good kids. We've homeschooled them for 8 years, and they're now in high school, and they have a lot of liberties. But,
yeah.
You know, bottom line, they're good kids. They just need to do their homework.
All right, good luck with that. Thank you for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, well, let's go ahead and go to where my mother lives, actually. I wonder if this is a neighbor. In Cottonwood, California. Welcome, Diana. You know what? I bet this is my mom because it's the same name. Hi.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is, has Gmail, Google changed their spam blocking policy?
Yes, they do it all the time. Isn't it frustrating?
It is very frustrating. Is there anything you can do to communicate to them or what?
No, trying to change Google is like trying to change a brick wall. What I would do is under rules, there are these things called rules which allow you to move your mail and do certain things. Anytime you want to produce a search, you can actually see create a filter. They're actually called filters.
Right.
In the filtering, you actually start dealing with it there. The other thing you can do is make sure to get your address book into Gmail. So basically give all of your contact information to Google. Solves the problem
perfectly.
Well, they have that already.
Yeah.
And what you can do with the filters, you can say, if it's in my address book, don't mark it as spam. Skip the spam step. It's a little complicated to do, but it's not – you'd probably be able to figure it out if you go under filters in Gmail.
Right.
And, you know, I have the same problem. I actually – a lot of the GeekSpeak mail, which all gets prefixed with GeekSpeak or GeekSpeak question, goes into my spam for a while. So for a while, I was very quiet on the GeekSpeak mailing list until I realized it. And Ben and I had the same problem. Happened around the same time. It wasn't anything we changed or the GeekSpeak server changed. It was just Google trying to be better and more efficient at spam restrictions. And that's one of those things is, you know, when a company like Google changes the way they look at the content in the world, everybody has reactions to that and affects it in ways we don't expect. So, for example, we were talking about the speech translation thing, Al.
Mm-hmm.
If that library and that rule changes and all of a sudden what you think you're saying is not really what the person's hearing,
mm-hmm.
it's a hard thing to deal with because you start having trust in a system and then it fails you.
Yes.
Mom, thanks so much for calling.
All right, nice to hear you, though I did not recognize your voice. I hope you get better.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye. All right.
That was really your mom?
That was really my mom.
Wow.
Amazing.
Excellent.
Yeah. Also from, let's see, Mount Madonna, Kim, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. I brought a hard drive enclosure from Fry's, and I was hoping to put this 40 gig hard drive in the enclosure, but when I tried to plug it in, it seems to have a different connection. The hard drive says PATA on it, P-A-T-A.
Yep.
And I think the connection is SATA.
Yeah, PATA has a 40-pin IDE connection, and SATA has a 7-pin connector.
Yeah, PATA and PATA is parallel ATA, and SATA is serial ATA, and ATA stands for anybody geeks.
Oh man, I just use acronyms.
Yeah, what you need to do to get the content off that drive is to get a PATA type enclosure, and yeah, unfortunately,
good luck.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck is the issue. Your computer out of probably has an extra line. You could probably keep it in that machine. Is it a Windows machine you're dealing with?
No, it's the machine I pulled it out of was an old Pismo MacBook.
Ooh, I love that. I love that one. That was
a great machine.
That was like my favorite one.
Do you need the data off this thing?
Well, it has a more current operating system than I have.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, the one I have is Jaguar.
did you?
It goes back a while.
Yeah. Did you replace the hard drive on this Mac, the old MacBook, the Pismo MacBook?
Someone did apparently because I don't think they came with a 40 gig hard drive.
You know,
here's
the thing is that with a PATA drive at this point, you're getting to the life cycle of the drive where you can't really rely upon that data, that hard drive being stable. You know, all hard drives fail over a period of time,
right.
And And the longer, the older the drive is, the theoretically the more time it's been used, theoretically the sooner it's going to die on you. So I kind of, and also 40 gigs, like right now if you were to buy a brand new 100 gig SATA laptop drive, you're talking about $80 or so. You're going to, you know, it's a lot, it's some money out of the pocket, but it's a lot larger than that padded drive. Now, it's possible that you got one of those magical drives that will last a long time, which sometimes happens with older drives, where you've got a drive that, since it's been running for so long, it's actually going to last a long time compared to new drives. But I'm not, I wouldn't invest a lot of energy into my, trying to get the content to use that drive. But getting the data off it, of course, maybe is worth a little bit. Though a new OS, I don't know, is it, how expensive is OS X?
It's not, it's totally, I mean, if you compare it to Windows, it's about half.
Right. The other thing is, if you're looking, if you've got old hardware like that Pismo MacBook, you can probably get a disk that no one's using anymore that they don't need because they've upgraded to the most recent thing that runs on Intel, which you can't run the most recent thing on that on the G4 or G3. I think that's the G3.
Is it a G3? Mm-hmm.
All right. Good luck.
Okay. Can I ask you one more quick
question?
Sure,
please feel it.
We're to upgrade to a newer MacBook Pro. Mm-hmm. Which models have the extended battery life? I know there was some point where they went from, you know, 4-hour battery life or 5-hour battery life to like more like 10 hours.
I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay.
Yeah, this was definitely one of those things where you've got to look at what Apple sees and then take a look at the forums, what people are experiencing. Do you need to travel a lot with a battery?
Oh, no, I live off grid, so battery life's really important. You know,
right. Yeah. Well, since you know about living off-grid, you probably have all the solutions to having extra power supplies. Keep in mind that a UPS, an uninterrupted power supply, if you can get the alarm to turn off, will run a laptop for a long time.
Excellent.
So that's one option for running a laptop.
You know, UPSs in general, I just got another. Mine burned out. You know what I do is I just bring them to Batteries Plus, and they just, I say, hey, this UPS burned out. They just take it, crack it open, replace the things inside because the batteries have a lifespan, stick them in there, and you can take the thing back, and that's what I did, and it saves you money.
Yeah, those UPSs are always designed to be replaceable batteries. I think it's kind of a mandate.
And they recycle the batteries. I mean, if you ever have a UPS die, just bring it to one of these places like Batteries Plus or, you know, whatever. That, you know, you can recondition them and save some money and save a little junk in the...
Kim, thanks for calling.
One more quick question.
Sure.
Do you know anything about, about 5 years ago, they were talking about free wireless from Morgan Hill to San Francisco. And I know I was a part of a group called Third Wave in Santa Cruz that was doing internet, establishing free internet downtown and stuff. But they kind of folded after that announcement. It seems, or they lost interest. And I just was wondering
right now the people that know about these are the people that are running the large ISPs in town. So Got.net and Cruise.io, both are people that deal with getting more data over over the mountain range, if you will. Got.net has quite a few different locations of beaming wireless, and they're doing this, of course, from tower to tower. What I would do is start looking at what they're saying. I wouldn't be surprised if both the Got.net and Cruise.io kind of have like a blog about what they're doing. You can, of course, call and ask. And maybe I can do one up on you. I'll actually ask. I'll contact the guys. I know both the owners and see what's kind of happening for wireless and such in the area. I'm curious about both those things. So I'll take a peek and mention it next time we talk on GeekSpeak.
Thanks,
Kim.
Take
care. Bye-bye. One last call today. John? Hi.
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
No problem.
Oh, hi. I'm in the neighborhood. I live there in the Harbor District. This is great. Well, I'm going to be going to Spain, and I was listening to your conversation there about this technology, about doing the translation on a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I have a Palm Pixie. That's a great little phone, but I don't think it's adaptable to that. But
no, it probably doesn't have the processing power.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm willing to buy a, Android that has a slide-out keyboard.
Yep.
And it has the ability to receive, I think it's a 4 gig or 8 gig microchip
FB chip. Yeah, any of those will be able to run translation software, kind of like what we were talking about.
Do you have any experience with that particular one for doing...
That one that I did on the iPhone over the air just a few minutes ago is also available on Android.
And the most recent, any Android you buy at this point will be able to handle that no problem. And the Android phones, the real complication with the system right now is that the carrier sometimes restricts its upgrade path. So you'll hear all these great new features in Android, but if you already have a phone a year old, it might be hard for you to get into that space. The Android expert's not here. I think all the people in this room have iPhones. Is that right, Lindsay? Do you have an iPhone?
No, I've got a Droid.
You have a Droid.
Droid 2.
Okay, so she knows a little bit about it. But we're running low on time, so I would say that if you're going to buy one, yes, it's going to can't bear it. If you're really curious about whether what we think about it, send the model number that you're interested in buying. Go up to geekspeak.org, fill out a contact form, say, Android purchase. Help me out, and we'll definitely be able to answer that, no problem for you.
Yeah, because I'm talking about using it overseas.
Yes, that's another issue that you've got to pay attention to. The Android is going to be the better bet on using overseas rather than an iPhone, but thank you for the call.
Okay.
All right, take care.
Send you need.
All right,
bye.
Great, bye. Well, this has been another episode of Geek Speak. We're here every week to help you out with questions about technology and computers and all that jazz. And we'll let you know that Geek Speak on KUSP. Oh, in just a second, Al's going to have a crazy USB of the week. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses, tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specializes in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBTech.com. California Governor Jerry Brown gives his State of the State address Monday afternoon at the Capitola at the Capitola Book Cafe, I'm assuming. Tune in to live coverage hosted by Jeffrey Coulson in Sacramento beginning at 5 p.m. here on Central Coast Public Radio KUSP. This is Central Coast Public Radio KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kusp.org. GeekSpeak is registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence, and he's used with permission. Al, what's your crazy USB of the week this week?
Well, it's called the E-Gang W3 IGM-7000 audio mouse.
Oh, that says it all.
Yes. I mean, that's a big meeting and probably lots of people involved in naming that one. And creative teams come in and they finally agreed, you know, after.
It's an audio mouse. You've never done a mouse as a
So basically,
USB.
Yeah, it's a mouse with a built-in speaker and microphone. It's a, I don't know, I've never thought of that idea.
Oh, is that it right there? You bought one?
Yeah. Here, let's
oh, my God.
See, I'll try out the microphone.
I cannot understand you, Al.
Well, if I take off my hand off the mouse, it's
That's
a little
fine.
Better. But then,
I think it's a good idea.
Just use your fingertips. Just use your fingertips.
Okay. It's just a little weird.
And how does the speaker sound?
Yeah, the speaker. Let's see if we can simulate that guy.
Oh my gosh.
Let me see here. Well, no, I can't do it.
This is clearly one of those engineering things that's like, you know, USB could be a mouse, but there's also USB microphones and speakers.
You know what it needs? It needs like a flashing light and a buzzer. If it had a flashing light, a buzzer, a microphone, and a speaker, then we'd have some kind. Then we'd really be
and a camera.
I think a laser
and maybe something
points straight up.
Something that warmed your hand at the same time you used the mouse,
like
a hand warmer, an audio speaker, microphone, all those things all put together in a USB mouse.
Don't forget the disco ball.
Disco ball, flashing.
Foot warmers.
Yep, foot warmer. All those things. Now we'd have a product. Yeah, it's the E-Gang W3 IGM-7000 audio mouse, and it's real. And the link will be up on geekspeak.org.
All the things we talked about today on GeekSpeak, of course, are available at geekspeak.org. You're welcome to join us via chat, and you can call us, and you can email us. We're here to help you out. Today, the geeks were Lindsay Lonnie, Al Luckow. My name's Lyle Troxell. Coming up next is the car guys, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And for KOSP and for GeekSpeak, my name's Lyle Troxell. We'll be here, of course, next week. Thanks for listening.